This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
I'm Ashley Webster.
I'm Kennedy.
I'm Jason Chaffetz, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, September 4th, 2023, I'm Mike Emanuel. The crisis at our southern border remains a massive problem. And for those who live and represent our southern border, they're calling on lawmakers on Capitol Hill to take action immediately.
Congress needs to, you know, not just point fingers, but we need to get off the sidelines and really start implementing some things. A large part of that starts with the power of the purse.
I'm Dave Anthony. In recent months, the job market has slowed down a little, while unemployment and inflation have risen a bit.
The risk of a severe recession isn't that big, but the risk of a kind of prolonged malaise recession, it's not deep, but it's long and painful, a la post-2008 kind of situation, that's what I am looking at.
And I'm Jimmy Failla. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
The crisis at our southern border is ongoing. Iowa Republican Governor Kim Reynolds calls it a disaster.
What is unhumanitarian is President Biden's unwillingness to address the open border and the crisis that we're seeing at the southern border. It is unconscionable. Every state is a border state right now. It's not just Texas.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre insists the Biden administration is making unprecedented progress.
The president has done more to secure the border and to deal with this issue of immigration than anybody else. He really has. June saw the single largest month-to-month drop in unlawful border crossing because of the policies this president put in place.
Meanwhile, Lieutenant Chris Olivares from the Texas Department of Public Safety calls that comment from the White House a joke.
When I heard that, I was shocked to actually hear those type of comments again, you know, from our own government, from our leadership, saying that they actually have done more for the border. They have done more to slow the flow. Well, that is a blatant lie. That's a slap in the face to the American people. It's a slap in the face to first responders that are on the front lines every single day dealing with this border crisis.
And New Jersey Republican Congressman Jeff Van Drew is alarmed by the Biden administration's plan to move migrants from New York City to the Atlantic City, New Jersey airport.
This is not just an Arizona problem or a Texas problem or a California problem. This is a United States of America problem.
For those who live and represent the border in Texas, the problem is even more intense.
In June, the numbers went down slightly for people coming over and giving themselves up, but all that did was increase the amount of people that were trying to get away.
Congressman Tony Gonzalez is a Texas Republican.
So in many cases, it's been worse, especially for ranchers and farmers that live in my district. Just last week, one of my ranchers reached out to me and shared a story how his tractor was stolen, and they were essentially on pursuit to find this. I mean, it's just one nightmare after another. It continues to get worse. And the Biden administration, they don't care two bits about anybody along the border, that's for sure.
What about the big picture national security standpoint? Some sources report to as many as 149 individuals on the FBI's terror watch list have been encountered by Customs and Border Protection this year alone, and we still have a few months to go before that number stops growing. What has been done about this? And if nothing, do you have a plan for ensuring potentially dangerous people and terrorists cannot freely enter the United States?
Yeah, Mike, thank you. And that's the part that really frustrates me. I spent 20 years in the military, in the intelligence community, 5 years in Iraq and Afghanistan. And there are people around the world that want to kill us. They hate Americans and they want to kill us. And this is one area that should unite us, should bring us all together. Wherever you fall on the other part of the conversation on border security, keeping America safe should be one that brings us together. Unfortunately, this is an area where, again, the Biden administration has failed at. The folks on the terrorist watch list that are coming over, that number is increasing. I had a conversation with some professionals, and, you know, one of the things I asked was, you know, are we safe? I mean, do we know who these people are? Do we know where they're going? And I wasn't too excited about the answer I got. Essentially, they were saying, well, the cartel isn't going to be, you know, the cartel is making a lot of money right now, so it would not be in the best interest for the cartel to smuggle someone with terrorist ties. And I'm thinking, we're relying on the cartel in order to keep our border safe. Does not make any sense to me. It has to stop. Part of what I've done is, I think it starts by labeling cartels as terrorist organizations. Now, I don't envision sending in SEAL Team 6 and doing all that kind of stuff. I'm envisioning you hit someone where it hurts the most, and you take their finances away. You start doing some of that, and then all of a sudden you'll see a change at the border.
To your point, these cartels are making tons of money. How worried are you about the power they are gaining as more and more money is going in their pockets?
I'm very worried. I mean, this is a situation that is just getting out of control. Once again, the last week I got briefed by the DEA, and they outlined a case to me where the cartel was trading thousands of pounds of fentanyl in exchange for arms. And they were able to stop that transaction from happening. But these are the dangers to it. It's not just what we see at the border. It's the fentanyl that's killing our kids. And the more the Biden administration does nothing, the more in power they are and the more danger it is to the safety of the United States of America.
So in addition to the human trafficking aspect, there's also the flow of illegal drugs, which you touched on. How big of a factor do you think that is in your district and districts around the country in terms of taking the lives of our young people?
It's absolutely saddening. Earlier this week, or last week, was Overdose Awareness Day, and I had an event in San Antonio with a couple of parents that lost their children to fentanyl, and it seems as if more and more people have a story. You know, over 100,000 Americans impacted every year. This is an epidemic that's only growing. We saw it with opioids a few years ago, now we see it with fentanyl. What's going to come next? I mean, we have to systematically change the way we approach things, and part of that is stopping it before it even gets to here. You know, we know the precursors to fentanyl are coming from China. They're going into Mexico. That's the route we need to stop. We need to stop them from even hitting North America, period. If we wait to, at the end, it's too late.
To that point, I know you've had some conversations with some important figures like the president of Guatemala. What insight have you gained from leaders like this and their views about the U.S. border crisis? Do they agree there's an issue?
They do agree it's an issue. And in many cases, the former president of Guatemala had called me and said, hey, look, Tony, you know, our borders are being overrun. We need help. And there's no one in the administration taking our call. Can you help? Thankfully, we were able to help connect some of those things. But once again, this is the Biden administration's job. You know, where's the Secretary of State Blinken on this deal? Instead of traveling all over the world, he needs to travel to our backyard and build out some of these relationships with these countries instead of just turning a blind eye and waiting for the death to occur with these fentanyls. The other part to it, they're asking for partners. There's so many central and South American countries that are asking for the United States' leadership. There's been a complete void by this administration. Also, Congress has a role to play as well. You know, Congress needs to, you know, not just point fingers, but we need to get off the sidelines and really start implementing some things. A large part of that starts with the power of the purse.
About Congress's role, I think people in Washington get hung up when you talk about comprehensive immigration reform, because I think some people on your side of the aisle worry about it's going to be a bunch of stuff that maybe they don't want. Are there some common sense things that can be done on Capitol Hill with a Republican House and a Democratic Senate that you think would be helpful in your district and on these at these various border districts?
I do, Mike. And you know, a district like mine, two-thirds of the Texas-Mexico border, 42% of the overall southern border, I don't just have the luxury of just pointing fingers and it's somebody else's fault. You know, people in my district, they want the nightmare to end, and it doesn't matter whose fault it is, just fix it. And there are some solutions. I think, one, you have to take some of the contentious issues off the table. You can't discuss them, or it just immediately derails a topic. Are they important? Yes. But in my eyes, you start with work visas, not pathway to citizenship, not deportation. You start with work visas, people that want to come over here to work, nothing else. They can't have access to voting. They can't have access to social services, but they can have access to a job. And, oh, by the way, in the United States, we have a huge vacancies in labor shortages across industries. So true. I think it's a win-win situation, but it takes political courage in order to get over the finish line.
It feels like border security has become a bit of a partisan issue, with Republicans really focusing on the border. Do you believe this should be a partisan issue, and why do you think it has become one when a top priority is, of course, protecting the American people?
You know, it shouldn't be a partisan issue, but it seems as if the country has gone more and more into their tribes and their corners. And, you know, Republicans also, you know, we demonize a lot of different folks on it. I get that aspect of it. But the part that I always try to relay is, we're all Americans, and how do we protect America? Part of that is making sure we have a safe, secure border, and we know who's coming into our country. And the other part of it, too, is right now, 9 out of 10 people seeking asylum will not qualify for asylum. So stop sending them down that route. You know, if they don't qualify for asylum, you don't bus them to Chicago or Los Angeles or New York. You get their day in court, you know, within days, and then you fly them back to their country of origin, and you offer a different route, you know, once again, an economic route through work visas. I think you do some of these things, and you alleviate the stress. You keep our country safe. You do it in a manner that's honorable and, you know, humanitarian focused. But, you know, the presidency certainly lacks political will, and then Congress is broken in so many ways. But I do think there's an opportunity now more than ever, because every state is a border state.
You've been home for the August recess, probably meeting with many, many of your constituents. I'm curious what they're telling you about the economy right now. We've seen all kinds of inflation, and I'm wondering how that is hitting people there in the southern border of Texas.
My district is not a wealthy district. A lot of blue-collar workers, and they're getting crushed. My constituents many times live in rural communities where they have to drive 40, 50 miles one way to get to work. So whether it's gas, whether it's the price of food, whether it's just utility bills, everything is increasing, and their pay isn't keeping up to that standard, to that level. This is an area where House Republicans need to lead on. If we're talking about the economy and we're finding real, tangible solutions to help people, we're going to be very successful in 2024 politically. If we go down this sidetrack and shiny object and get pulled on it and it's just politics, you know, most people, I don't think we'll be as successful. Most people are just trying to live their lives. They want to be safe. They want to be healthy. They want to be prosperous. And the Biden economics are crushing them.
When you guys come back into session, obviously government funding is going to be a big issue. Do you expect to get some kind of deal to at least keep the government running through, I don't know, the fall into December? Or what's your anticipation when you've returned to session?
Yeah, Mike, it's going to be a knife fight. I sit on the House Appropriations Committee, and I'm proud of the House bills, the very conservative House Republican bills that we've passed out of committee. I'd like to see those bills come to the floor and get passed so that way we can fund the government. I am 100% against a continuing resolution, whether that continuing resolution is 1 hour, 1 day, 1 week, 1 year. I'm against that, because I think I'm of the mindset, lock everybody in the room, and no, I'm Catholic. Lock everybody in the room, and nobody comes out until there's white smoke. Too much time, you see folks just punt the ball down the field and wait till the very end. No, let's draw a line in the sand, and let's get to it now. Pass a conservative budget that tackles some of these issues. No more continuing resolutions.
All right, well, we will be watching it. Texas Congressman Tony Gonzalez, grateful for your time today. I wish you a wonderful week, and, of course, safe travel, sir.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate you.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
This is Jimmy Failla with your Fox News commentary coming up.
It's Labor Day, the perfect time to talk about the job market. After Friday's update showing a better-than-expected 187,000 jobs created in August, but hiring in June and July was revised down as the unemployment rate crept up to 3.8%. President Biden's reaction?
We've recovered all the jobs lost during the pandemic. We've added a million more new jobs. More than 700,000 people joined the labor force last month, which means the highest share of working-age Americans are in the workforce now than at any time in the past 20 years.
And the unemployment rate's rise from 3.5% surprised some.
The good news on that was being driven by people coming off the sidelines into the workforce. Labor participation rate went up.
Brian Brenberg is co-host of The Big Money Show on the Fox Business Network.
The challenging part of that is about two-thirds of those people coming off the sidelines were unemployed. So that's why the rate went up to 3.8%. So not a bad number by itself, but the beginning possibly of a trend that gets your attention.
All right, let's go into that a little deeper. There are two different things in these job reports, two different things entirely. You have 187,000 jobs. That's an estimate created the Labor Department. That's hiring.
Yep.
It's a completely separate thing altogether, how they come up with the unemployment rate. That's a survey of Americans.
That's right.
And if you haven't looked for a job and you don't have a job, and this is, what is it, 6 months or whatever it is, you haven't looked, you're not even counted.
That's right. Unemployed doesn't mean you don't have a job. To be unemployed, you have to not have a job and be looking for a job. So what's happening right now is, you've had a lot of people on the sidelines, not working. But
what are they doing?
They weren't looking for work either. Well,
can they be like contractors or doing something on the side still making money?
No. You've got to be out of the labor force. So these guys are out of the labor force. And during the pandemic, your ability to do that was aided by all the pandemic stimulus benefits, aid benefits, et cetera. So you had folks on the sidelines, maybe living off savings, living off those benefits.
Or maybe selling stuff on eBay.
Maybe doing some under the table. But the point is now what they're saying is, you know what? I need to get a job. And I'm telling you, I'm looking for a job. I don't have one yet.
Yeah.
And that's what's feeding into that unemployment rate number that's ticking up. It's healthy, ultimately, to have people coming off the sidelines. That's good. For a long time, we've been saying the participation rate's too low. But now there's this question of, okay, well, they're coming back. Are they going to be able to find the jobs? And the situation seems to be pretty good right now, but the situation is changing. And the question is, how fast is that going to change?
We've been told for a couple of years now, there were more job openings than people to fill them.
Still are.
Now, but is that, there is a little bit of a shrinking of the gap, right?
That's right. Yeah. So we've come off we were talking, you know, earlier this year, 10, 11 million job openings out there. We're down now south of 9 million, into the eights. That's still a good number. That's still like 1.5 for everybody looking for a job.
Are those jobs filled, or are those jobs companies don't want to hire anymore? Did they decide, forget that job anymore?
It looks like their company's pulling jobs off the market because they're kind of looking ahead and they're saying, okay, what are our prospects? Mm-hmm. What are consumers doing right now? Do we feel like we can pay for these jobs?
How's the economy?
So you look at that number and it's kind of a little bit of a forward read from employers, from businesses on how they're feeling. And again, you know, they still got a lot of jobs out there. That's a high number historically, but the rate of it coming down. So we're talking about rates here. Everything's about rate. The rate of increase in the unemployment rate, the rate of decrease in those job openings. None of those numbers are bad in and of themselves, but where they're moving and how fast is the thing you want to be looking at.
Speaking of rate, for the last couple of months, including this one, average hourly earnings have been higher than annual inflation.
Yes. Lately.
That has to be a good thing.
Well, it's a good.
It sounds like a good
it
thing.
It is, but you know, everything seems to have two sides to it. It's a good thing for a worker.
What president was the one who wanted a one-armed economist? I remember right. He didn't want to have on the other
on
hand.
On the one hand, on the other hand.
What's true? Is that Truman, maybe?
It's true. They probably all do, right? What's interesting is, yes, I mean, we need wage gains. We've had inflation outpacing wages for the better part of 2.5 years, so it's great that we're seeing that reverse. The challenge is in this environment where you've got a Federal Reserve that's trying to figure out, do we have to crank up interest rates more to bring down inflation? They see that hotter wage number and they say, could that start to be the catalyst for more inflation going forward, right? This kind of wage price spiral that people talk about.
We're already at a 22-year high for interest rates. Mortgage rates are up over 7%. They came down a little bit recently, but they're still over 7% for a 30-year rate. 22-year high. Housing's important. I know that's not a nationwide market. That's always regional.
Yep.
But still, this is a tough time to navigate exactly what's going to happen next.
The housing market is maybe the toughest thing of all to me, because you've got this kind of simultaneous interest rates going way up beyond what people have gotten used to, at
least. Right.
And you've got housing prices that are still so high. So anybody wanting to buy a home right now is just sort of banging their head against the wall saying, why me and why now?
Right.
But that matters, because you've got that dynamic. The rates are hitting auto loans now as well. So if you want to get into a new car, you're dealing with higher interest rates. I mean, the average car payment for a new car now is north of $700 a month.
And loans are like 7 and 8 years now.
7 and 8 years. The interest rate, I think the average interest rate on those is over 9%. So here's what that means. This is the squeeze on the consumer. Now, you want to go back to the jobs numbers and talk about employers and open positions and are they hiring? They're looking at that consumer and they're seeing what that consumer's doing. And they're getting nervous about that squeeze, because that consumer has been plowing ahead and keeping this economy afloat, but they are looking stressed.
The savings rate for people has been going down and down. It's what, 3.5%, something like that?
It's down. You couple it with things like more Bank of America saying more people dipping into their 401k to make ends meet. Of course, we talk all the time about credit card balances at record highs. So again, the consumer has been amazing, because amidst all of that happening, they've still been spending, but you watch the balances go up on the debt. You watch them digging in now into these savings pools, and you just know, you don't know when, but you know that can't last. And what a lot of people have been pointing to as kind of an X factor now are these student loan payments restarting.
Yeah, interest rates started accruing as we got into September.
Yes.
And then October is when I believe the payments
are finally due. You got to start making the payments.
Yeah.
So you take everything we've talked about, add that on top, and that's where people see, could that be the real breakage here? You know, we talk about wanting a soft landing out of all this inflation, and that would be great. That's what the Fed's aiming for. But a soft landing can get really rocky really fast if all of these factors hit the consumer at once. And we don't know the answer to that, but I think it's a non-zero probability that things could kind of move quickly in terms of consumer deterioration here.
We have heard the R word of recession for a couple of years now after COVID. Like, when gas hit $5 a gallon last year, people were like, well, we're going to go into a recession. We had economic growth for a couple of months that were a couple of quarters that were a little bit negative, but then we bounced positive again.
Yeah.
We haven't really gone into a severe recession.
Yeah.
Do you think we're going to?
Well, you know, part of it is we had those two quarters of negative growth last year, and they didn't call it a recession.
Some tried to, because, well, the definition is muddy. It depends on who you want to, like.
You got your rule of thumb, and you got the guys who make the call, but the rule of thumb, we kind of hit the rule of thumb measure, and everyone said that looks like a recession. To me, the question always was, when do all these benefits really start to wear off for people? Because I think that's driving the spending that kept things afloat. So we've had long predicted recession. you know, to me, the risk of a severe recession isn't that big, but the risk of a kind of prolonged malaise recession, it's not deep, but it's long and painful, a la post-2008 kind of situation, that's what I am looking at and looking for. And I do think if the student loan repayment thing really does happen, in other words, if the administration doesn't find a way to soft pedal it, I do think that could really be a catalyst for these numbers dropping. But again, I've been in the camp of people who have seen this coming for a long time. So you might look at what I'm saying and take it with a grain of salt.
I want to talk about one more thing post-COVID, and that is just the jobs that a lot of people have. You know, a lot of Americans stayed home for a while because of COVID. And some still work remotely. Some have a hybrid schedule. You know, in the tech world, they're trying to get people back to the office. I know Amazon's CEO is battling with his workers on this issue. Do you think we'll ever get back to the 5 days a week for most Americans who have these kinds of jobs?
We've made a permanent shift, in my view. I don't think we're going to have 5 days a week like we did before the pandemic. And one of the big businesses want workers in because they know there's a benefit of people being together in the room together. That's where a lot of the creativity happens.
Right.
It's also, frankly, a little bit easier to keep people on task. I think. Let's be honest.
I can't do my laundry
can't
in
do
the
your
office.
Laundry in
I can't
the
walk
office.
The dog. I can't do
unless
all
you've
things.
Got a great office.
Right.
But at the same time, companies are realizing the benefits of being able to shrink their real estate footprint. And that saves them money.
Yeah.
You actually pass the cost on to your workers when they office out of their home. So no, I don't think we're going back to 5 days like we knew. But I do think the pendulum is going to be swinging back here because especially as companies reduce their expectations for how many workers they need, the power is shifting back to companies. You can see that right now because they're making demands now that they weren't making 2 years ago.
Yeah, right.
2 years ago, Amazon wasn't saying, either get back in the office or we'll see you later.
All right, again, 1 to 2 p.m. weekdays on the Fox Business Network. The Big Money Show, co-host Brian Brenberg. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Here's a look at the week ahead.
Monday marks the unofficial end of summer as Americans celebrate Labor Day. Tuesday, former Trump White House economic advisor Peter Navarro faces trial for a contempt of Congress charge. He was charged after failing to answer a subpoena from the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th Capitol violence. Wednesday, arraignments begin in Fulton County, Georgia for the 19 defendants accused of trying to overturn the state's 2020 presidential election results. Former President Trump has waived his arraignment appearance and pleaded not guilty. Thursday, President Biden will be departing Washington to attend the G20 Leaders Summit in India. The three-day summit's expected to focus on the Ukraine war and climate change. Friday is the first launch window for Virgin Galactic's fourth spaceflight, with three customers who are among the earliest to reserve space on the suborbital flight. And Florida's Supreme Court will hear arguments on a case challenging the state's ban on abortions at 15 weeks. That's a look at your week ahead. I'm Rich Dennison, Fox News.
Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Jimmy Failla.
What's on your mind?
Labor Day became a national holiday in 1894. Which is the same year Joe Biden was born. I'm just kidding. I'm pretty sure he's older than that. It was started by labor unions who wanted to celebrate workers with a day off from all the long shifts they were putting in. Yeah, back then most people had jobs that required them to work for a living because it was still hard to get elected to Congress. Today, we've got all kinds of lazy politicians. And if we're being honest, the workers aren't much better. Every time you open up the internet, there's a new trend about ways to slack off on the job. For instance, quiet quitting is when you're fully employed, but you're not trying at all, like not even a little. I'm pretty sure this is what they're doing on the New York Mets. There's also a trend called loud laboring, which is the art of doing nothing but talking nonstop about just how much you're accomplishing so people think you're killing it in life. This is pretty much everyone on Instagram. Then there's the 20% of the country that's not coming into the office at all because they're still trying to milk their COVID lifestyle for all it's worth. Don't get me wrong. I like day drinking in my pajamas as much as the next guy, but at some point you got to put on pants, leave the house, and take some pride in yourself. I say that because everybody knows a guy who let himself go during the lockdowns and still hasn't turned it around. And if you don't, it's because it's you. So my advice this Labor Day is to celebrate your work if you're actually doing it, or get going if you're not. There's a dignity that comes from holding yourself to a higher standard that's going extinct in our society at scary speeds. You can see it every time you walk down the street and see another able-bodied person panhandling for cash. Now, I know some of that is the terrible scourge of drug addiction, but it's the addiction to laziness that's ruining most people. And it's happening because the smartphone is tricking everyone into feeling like the most important person in the world by only showing them news articles they agree with, social media videos they like, and nonstop advertising for products they were just talking about 5 minutes earlier. But don't worry, the phones aren't spying on you at all. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But we play along with all of this because all of these products can be delivered right to our doors, making life more convenient than ever, yet the world has never felt less happy than it does right now. One of the main reasons why is you enjoy things in life a whole lot more if you have to go out and work for them. So happy Labor Day, not just to the adults, but to all the kids going back to school, whether they're in red states learning math with timetables and flashcards, or they're in blue states learning math by tipping a drag queen named Cinnabuns. The point is, it's time for everyone to start making the type of effort that gets the job done for all of us. Be sure to listen to Fox Across America with me, Jimmy Failla, weekdays from noon to 3 on the Fox News app and foxacrossamerica.com.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.